This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, editor of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. John Singleton, the first African-American to be nominated for a Best Director Oscar, died earlier this week at age 51. He worked as a director in TV as well as film, directing episodes of Billions, American Crime Story, Empire, and Snowfall. But his first and biggest impact was in the movies, where at age 24, he earned Academy Award nominations for writing and directing the influential drama Boys in the Hood. Singleton grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and Boys in the Hood was his very personal account of life in that particular neighborhood. Singleton went to USC Film School, where he wrote the beginnings of Boys in the Hood as his student thesis. When Hollywood expressed interest in turning his screenplay into a film, Singleton insisted on directing it himself, which he did. Cuba Gooding Jr. stars as Trey Stiles, a young man trying to navigate life in South Central L.A., and the only one of his friends who lives with and is being raised by his father. Lawrence Fishburne plays his father, who in one scene takes his son and one of his son's friends to a nearby neighborhood and challenges them to take a more thoughtful and political perspective on life in the hood.
Why don't y'all take a look at that sign up there? See what it says? Cash for your home? You know what that is?
It's billboard.
What are y'all, Amos and Andy? Are you stepping and he's fetching? I'm talking about the message, what it stands for. It's called gentrification. It's what happens when the property value of a certain area is brought down. You listening?
Yeah.
To bring the property value down. They can buy the land at a lower price. Then they move all the people out, raise the property value, and sell it at a profit. Now, what we need to do is we need to keep everything in our neighborhood, everything, black. Black-owned with black money. Just like the Jews, the Italians, the Mexicans, and the Koreans do.
Ain't nobody from outside bringing down the property value. It's these folk shooting each other and selling that crack rock.
Well, how you think the crack rock gets into the country? We don't own any planes. We don't own no ships. But we are not the people who are flying and floating that in here. I know every time you turn on the TV, that's what you see, black people.
Yeah.
Selling the rock,
right.
Pushing the rock,
yeah.
Pushing the rock. Yeah, I know. But that wasn't a problem as long as it was here. Wasn't a problem until it was in Iowa and it showed up on Wall Street where there are hardly any black people. Now, if you want to talk about guns, why is it that there's a gun shop on almost every corner in this community?
Why?
Tell you why. For the same reason that there's a liquor store on almost every corner in the black community. Why? They want us to kill ourselves. You go out to Beverly Hills, you don't see that. But they want us to kill ourselves. Yeah, the best way you can destroy a people, you take away their ability to reproduce themselves.
Yeah.
Who is it that's dying out here on these streets every night? Young brothers like yourselves.
Terry Gross spoke with John Singleton in 1991 when Boys in the Hood was first released.
When you sold the script for Boys in the Hood, you insisted on directing it yourself. I was wondering what the movie was like in your mind when you envisioned an assigned director doing
it. I never could envision an assigned director. That'd be like selling my mother, you know what I'm saying? that'd be like selling one of my relatives to someone. Can you imagine somebody like Alan Parker trying to direct Boys in the Hood? You know, it would probably end up Furious would be a Baptist minister, and Trey would be a choir boy, and at the end of the movie, Doughboy would sing a gospel song. So I don't think anybody else could have directed this film outside of myself.
Alan Parker is, by the way, the person who directed Mississippi Burning, among other things, for our listeners who are trying to figure out which director he is. So you thought it would be shown in things that would end up being stereotypical and generationally and locationally all wrong.
I couldn't let nobody from Iowa or, you know what I'm saying, or Idaho or even Encino direct this film. It had to be directed by somebody who lived it.
What kind of neighborhood did you grow up in?
I grew up on Vermont and Hunter first, and in a part of South L.A. known as Inglewood in the flight path of LAX. And it was rough, but it wasn't as rough as it is now, because, you know, the neighborhood is now seeing the after effects of the last decade of the big burgeoning crack trade, and you know, it's suffering because of that. It's now just now trying to get back up.
Do you have any friends who were killed?
A couple.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
What were the circumstances?
Well, I have a friend. One friend, his name was Robbie Stringer. He got killed because he in the mid '80s, when cocaine was made cheaper in the form of crack, you know, because that only happened in the early '80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he started getting involved in the trade and stuff, and he got killed when he was 17. He got killed in an alley down the street from my house. It really changed my neighborhood. Just like, you know, when one of the kids in the film gets killed, it changes everybody's life.
How did it change your life?
It was like a crux in which all these things that were happening growing up in the early '80s were like coming to fruition, and I was realizing that there was a certain system in order to that was working towards, you know, my demise, you know, and to bring me down. I could just look around. I can remember being able to go to the park, and when I was a kid, and there would always be a park supervisor there. You could check out a basketball, or baseball, whatever. And after certain laws were passed here in this country, in the Reagan administration, and Proposition 13 here in Los Angeles County, tax money didn't go towards park supervisors or anything, and social programs and stuff was being taken away. And I could see that, you know. So what does a park become then? The park becomes a turf. It doesn't become a recreational facility. You know, I can remember when Ronald Reagan deemed ketchup to be a vegetable. I was in sixth grade. So, I'm a product of the last decade. And now I'm out for change. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the '90s, so I'm ready to deal a new hand.
No, Boys in the Hood is a lot of it is about the importance of having a father around, a strong father,
that's right,
as a good role model, and also to kind of discipline you and teach you the difference between right and wrong.
There's a whole population of young people, black, white, whatever, that don't have a strong father figure or a strong family background, for that matter. Most people don't even talk to their kids, all right? And the deal is that it's my belief that a young boy needs a man how to teach him how to be a man. A woman cannot teach him how to do that. She can only teach him her perception of what she believes a man to be. And as a result of this, since we have a whole population of young men that don't have father figures and don't have that direction, they're always in pursuit of their manhood. You see, they're always going to be not really in tune with themselves as young men, and throughout their lives searching for a sense of being what being a man is.
Did you have a strong father?
Yes, my father was the model for Furious.
And In the movie, the parents of the main character are separated. Your parents were separated too?
My parents never married, but they were still good parents, you know.
So who did you live with?
I lived with my mother for a certain period of time, and then when I turned 11, I went to live with my father.
It's kind of like the character in the movie.
It's exactly like the character in the movie.
Now, in the movie, the character changes because the mother kind of made a pact with the father that if discipline became a real problem with their son, that she would send him over to the father and have him live with the father. Was that what happened with you?
Yes, it was.
What were you getting into that was a warning sign to your mother?
Just, you know, fighting too much and getting into some certain things that I shouldn't have been getting into. I was on the wrong path, and I needed to be guided onto the right path, and that's why I went to live with my father.
What did your father do to lay down the law right away?
He taught me a sense of responsibility. He made me work around the house. He taught He taught me to value myself and my culture and where I was, you know, just, you know, where and it respect him, you know. And, you know, I looked up to my father like most people look up to Superman. You see?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, what were we saying?
Oh, I wanted to know if you ever defied your father.
Yeah, a couple of times we got into it and stuff. You know, I didn't do everything my pops told me. I wouldn't be here right now. You know, I remember my father wanted me to go into real estate. And I was like, no. He's like, real estate, you know, real estate is the way to go. You can get your license before you finish college. I was like, no, I'm going to be a filmmaker, you know. So I don't do everything my father tells me.
Were you ever looked on by some of your friends as too much of the good kid of...
Oh, heck no. No,
okay.
I've always been a psychological person.
Uh-huh.
I've always been a kind of person that could sway attitudes and sway weak-minded people into certain directions, whether or not they wanted to or not going in that direction.
This is a great trait to have as a filmmaker. How did you use it as a teenager?
Well, I mean, there are certain people I could get to do certain things that they ordinarily wouldn't do. My father always taught me to be a leader and not a follower, to work smarter and not harder. And so if you have a certain population of people that are followers, they're easy to be led. And they're easy to be led through the power of the way you speak to them. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so, my father taught me to value that. And also I learned that a lot from comic books, too. I mean, no, you learn a lot from comic books. You read comic books and you have certain characters who are kings and who consider themselves royalty, and certain people who command respect, like Dr. Doom and stuff. And you look at the way they speak and the way they, you know, they describe them in the stories about how they walk and everything, and you know that you know what they're about and everything. And as a kid, I internalized that, me and my little friends, you know. And so I had my little pack, just like, you know, Doughboy, Ricky, and Trey.
Boys in the Hood has gotten very good reviews. It's doing really well at the box office. How is that going to affect the next movie that you make? Do you know what that movie will be? Are you getting surprising offers?
I'm writing my next film right now.
Mm-hmm.
And my next film is going to be even more experimental. I mean, now that I've done something like this, it allows me to be more free and with my work. And it's going to be about the war between black men and women on an economic level, you know. It's a romance. it's like, you know, it's a straight up street romance, and since it deals with emotions and love, it's even more dangerous than Boys in the Hood. So maybe you'll have couples shooting each other in the theaters. No, not for real. I'm just joking. I'm wondering whether or not I'm going to be able to get a date after this movie.
Well, John Singleton, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. All right. Peace out.
John Singleton, the Oscar-nominated writer and director of Boys in the Hood, speaking to Terry Gross in 1991. He died earlier this week at age 51.